professor of horticultural science at
Delaware Valley College. And so she's going to talk to us about training the next generation.
All right, thank you, Neil. Thank you so much for being here, everyone. I know this has just been wonderful to hear about everything that people are doing at so many different schools around the country. It's really exciting. But as I reflect on all the things I've heard, of course, this is our last session besides the keynote after this, is that I actually made notes to myself because I'm used to doing last-minute tweaks to presentations, and of course we had to turn our slides in, So there's so many things that I'm going to interject, but one of the things I wanted to start with was to talk a little bit about Delaware Valley College and how we got to the point of where we are today and why we do what we do at Del Valle. So a little bit of history of who's actually never heard of Delaware Valley College?
Until today.
Yeah. Okay, so really a fair number of people. We're about an hour north of Philadelphia in Doylestown, which is in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And we have around 1,700 undergraduates. So we are a small college. We actually started as the National Farm School. In 1896, we were actually founded by Rabbi Joseph Krauskopf. And Joseph Krauskopf was really a revolutionary thinker of the time. He was born in Prussia. He emigrated to the United States. He was very, very well educated. And he moved to Philadelphia, and then he actually became the rabbi at Knesset Israel Synagogue, which is, again, it's in Elkins Park, which is outside of Philadelphia. And Krauskopf was actually considered to be one of the leaders in the Reformed Jewish movement. And K.I., as it's known, became one of the largest synagogues in the United States at the time. So again, Krauskopf was really a novel thinker. He was not a farmer. He was not an agriculturalist whatsoever. So again, keep that in the back of your mind as you begin to think about how we got to where we are. And again, as we're here, where so many of you are from liberal arts schools. But around 1894, immigration, was at its peak from Russian Jews. And Krauskopf was very, very concerned with this. Many of the Russian Jews were very poor. They didn't have jobs. They didn't have ways of making a living. And so, again, Krauskopf really wanted to do something about this. And he actually, in his travels in Russia, he saw the Jewish Agricultural School. And after seeing that, he met with Leo Tolstoy. And Tolstoy was actually the one who said to him, we really need to train these youths and these people without any way of making a living, without any skill, to be farmers. Okay? This would be a wonderful job for them. It's productive. So upon Leo Tolstoy's advice, Krauskopf came back to the United States, and he purchased about 100 acres of farmland in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. And he decided he would open a school there, and again, he named this the National Farm School. So the first class at the National Farm School was in 1896. It had six students. It was supposed to be a three-year program. Now, mind you, at this point, it was not a college. It was just a school to train Jewish youth. And from that time, from 1896 on, the program and the school became more well-known. It began to grow. It had more students. And Krauskopf, his vision for his school is that we should have more tillers, not tailors. And I like that because he really, as I come to this conference today, obviously there's really a push for more tillers, no matter what anyone's background is. And so one of the things, though, that was very strongly emphasized at the National Farm School was that the curriculum should be science-based. Not only were these the people attending the school, these youth, going to learn all the skills of the land. They were going to learn the science behind that. And Krauskopf actually consulted with Liberty High Bailey. I heard someone else quote him this morning. And some of the other leaders at the land-grant universities. And so, again, the school grew, it prospered, it had more and more students. And in 1948, they changed the name from the National Farm School to the National Agricultural College. And the premise, again, not only was it science-based education, but it was academics plus experience. Academics plus experience. And so all the students, and it had started back at the National Farm School, all the students would work on campus in the farms. And again, as the school grew, as Krauskopf prospered, as the school prospered, they bought up more and more property. And so, interestingly, Oscar Hammerstein is from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. He used to only drink the college's milk, and it was delivered to him. So that's kind of just an interesting aside. But in any case, students worked on the farm, they took classes, and it was very much, again, science-based coursework, working on the farm, getting experience, and so that was really the basis for the National Agricultural College. It also became, at this point, a four-year institution, and from that point in 1948 on, as the school began to grow, it became a regular college. They began to add other programs, the enrollment grew, became co-ed, and in 1960, okay, just 12 years after that, they actually changed the name to Delaware Valley College of Science and Agriculture. And then they actually added, in addition to Bachelor of Science degrees, they added Bachelor of Arts degrees. So the program and the college was growing, and they were adding things beyond just the traditional agriculture and science classes. And of course, in 1989, the name was shortened again, just to Delaware Valley College, or DelVal, as we like to call it. And we've added our first graduate program in 1998. And now the goal for the college is to actually become a university. So we are adding more and more graduate programs. Hopefully in the next 5 years, it will be, I don't know if the name is even going to stay the same. In fact, if anyone has a lot of money, they'd like to donate to the college after a year, the university after a year. But that's really the genesis of how things came to be at DelVal. And this is the mission. This is from our most recent strategic plan. I think it's important to, one of the things we did in the strategic planning process, and I've been fortunate enough to be part of that, is we looked at the history of the college, and we looked at what we were good at doing. I was going to say, when Krauskopf was purchasing land, again, he built up the holdings of the college. Some of that land was actually sold to Burpee and Fort Hook Farm, which I'm sure many people have heard of Fort Hook Lima Beans. That farm is right across the college from campus. If you look at our mission, the part that really, I think, resounds here for what we're trying to get at with this conference is quality education emphasizing hands-on experiential learning in agriculture. And that is really what we try to do. Is to get the students as much hands-on learning as is absolutely possible. So we actually now, the college has 1,000 acres of land on three different farms. Our main campus, which is the original land purchased by Joseph Krauskopf, that's about 400 acres. So quite a bit of it is the forest, which is used by the biology department. We also have a lot of tillable acres and orchards. We have an area that is certified organic. We also have about 200 acres on the Rock Farm. That's about 30 minutes away. That has a living history museum. And right now we're actually looking at starting a program in sustainable agriculture. And what they would like to do is use the Rock Farm to be the center for sustainable ag. And then finally, about a year or so ago, we were given a beautiful 400-acre farm. It's called the Gemmel Campus. It has extensive orchards, extensive fields for agronomic crops and then woodland as well, and that's about 15 minutes away. And so we have a plethora of land. The majority of what we use for the hands-on teaching, and that's what I'm going to talk about more today, is really right on the main campus. And that's the beauty of why we're able to do so much of what we do, is that when I walk outside of my classroom building, it's less than a 5-minute walk, just down the hill and through the tunnel underneath the railroad tracks, so yes, we're on the other side of the tracks, to our farm. This is just an aerial view of the campus, and you can see that obviously there's a lot of land, as I said, a lot of forest, and kind of in this area right up here, the main area of campus, all the dormitories. So our main campus farm, around 225 acres of field crops. We have a 60-cow dairy. We have beef cattle, swine, goats. The campus itself is considered to be an arboretum. And so, again, this hands-on living laboratory is right there. So all the ornamental horticulture classes are using the campus every day. Some days you drive into campus and the arboriculture class is hanging out of the trees. Other days you see students riding around on flatbed trailers with trees that they're going to plant on the back of the truck. We also have a breeding facility for standard bred horses. We have an equine program. We have numerous greenhouses on campus. There's four different ranges of greenhouses with just a lot of different capabilities there. What I'm going to focus on, though, is our horticultural program, and even more specifically, teaching about not only sustainable agriculture and organics, but teaching about vegetable production. So we have about 60 acres of our orchards and our vegetable fields. Right now we have apples, peaches, and blackberries, and the hope is to add more of the small fruit. We're in a transition year right now. We just changed deans of agriculture and as well as farm managers. So we don't have a lot as far as vegetables are concerned. But we do have two high tunnels. And I'll talk about high tunnels again. They're just a great tool to have. If you are truly going to use a campus farm, having a high tunnel is a wonderful thing. And our high tunnels were actually built by the students. And in fact, the one high tunnel is not even quite finished. It's in our project this fall. I have a couple of pictures of what we've done. And one of the things I wanted to though speak about was how we integrate our agricultural curriculum with our what we call our core curriculum. These are the liberal arts classes, the English, the humanities. Every student, no matter what your major is at Del Valle, even if you come into the college wanting to be a farmer, no matter what the case is, even if you're criminal justice, you have to take these classes. This is 48 credits out of 128. So a lot of times there's actually complaints about I'm going to be in agriculture. Why do I have to take this? And yet, what we feel is so important is that no matter what you graduate and just think you're going to do, it doesn't always work out that way. And so, when you've gone through a program like this, you will have the background and the skills to do many different things. And in fact, whether you want to be a farmer or you want to work in the agricultural industry or you want to do something totally different, you have many of these capabilities. In the horticulture major, as I said, out of that, the 48 is the core curriculum. 128 total credits are required. So that's made up of all the basic courses like the botany, plant physiology, plant propagation, plant pathology. There is an IPM course, sustainable ag courses. There's three fruit classes. There's commercial vegetable production for dance. The list goes on and on. So it's very, very heavily weighted in the sciences and in the agricultural sciences. Of course, soils courses as well. And so that's really been interesting for me today as I've listened to things. As we talk about training farmers and training people in agriculture, so many of the people who are being trained on farms don't have any of the scientific basis. You know, for example, like the plant pathology, the IPM. And I just raise that, just as a doctor, not for any opinion or reason, I just am finding that interesting as I look at what we do at Del Valle. The other interesting thing, though, is four of those credits are for what we're calling experiential learning. And that doesn't seem like there are many credits to apply to something as important as that. But really what those four credits are is every student is required to complete 500 hours of work in their chosen field. And then actually that 500 hours used to be 900, but they lowered it because some of the people in like the English majors and some of the other majors were having trouble finding really good jobs for that many hours. But in any case, the 500 hours we're at means that student has to, if they are in a production major, they have to find a job in production. If they're in an ornamental horticulture major, they need to find some sort of job in ornamental horticulture. And then they also have to do a capstone project where they write about their experiences, they analyze what they learned, what they didn't learn. And so again, our graduates, when they're done, they have job experience. They have things that they put on their resume. And most beneficial is that many of them have found out, you know what, I don't want to do what I want to set out to do. Or I found another area that I like even better. And so having that requirement to actually work in your field has been, again, extremely important and extremely valuable to the graduates. One of the things that we often hear is that our students can get out of school and hit the ground running because they've had so much experience. And when I say 500 hours, many of the students, because they want to work, have even more than that. So the classes that the courses that I want to talk about most specifically today are four of the classes that I teach. Commercial vegetable production, organic crop science, and what we call horticulture techniques 1 and 2. At first, when I started at the college, I'm like, horticulture techniques, what does that mean? And of course, you know, I'm looking up and there's no other horticulture techniques, or very few, at any of the schools I can find. And then I began to realize that it's a great thing because I can essentially teach whatever I wanted to. So horticulture 1 and 2 have become classes that enable me to cover things that I know are not covered in the rest of the Swedish curriculum. Another thing about the organic crop science is we actually have 2.5 acres on campus that are certified organic. And during the organic crop science class, which is held in the fall, we actually have our organic inspection for the certification. And that's something that the students are required to attend. I schedule it during our lab period. And so we actually walk around with the inspector. The students have all the paperwork. They hear what the inspector has to say. So it once again becomes this hands-on learning, this actual thing that we're doing with myself and the farm manager. Also, to carry through with the idea that their education is more than just agricultural, I have readings in all of my classes. I have papers required in all of my classes. And they all have to do presentations. And so you're not going to get out of the major that I'm in without sitting in front of class many, many times, because that's so important to be able to have those skills. I also encourage discussion. Many times we find ourselves segueing into something that is not necessarily what I'm supposed to cover, but it's very valuable. And we definitely have many discussions out in the field as the students are doing the projects and doing their labs. So what I've found is the benefits of using the farm are just enormous for the type of education that we have at DVC. There's no substitute for getting out there, getting your hands dirty. And I think everyone, that's why we're here today, is because everyone has these experiences with farms and gardens, and they found it so beneficial, from the artist who was here speaking to all the different classes that are really now, especially here at Dickinson, using that farm. One of the things that I do is that we, anytime that we are going to do a field lab, there's always a lecture beforehand, whether it's the week before, the class period before, or sometimes even the hour before we go out, so that the students actually, again, have this scientific background for what they are going to be doing in the field, hearing through on what Joseph Krauskopf, what his original idea was. And many times what I will try to do is reference things that they have learned in other classes. For example, I also teach the botany lab that all of the students have to go through. And so I can reference things that pull them out of the botany lab so that when we're talking about a squash, and I say, well, it's a squash fruit, and so when I go to the tantrum, that's correct. So again, pulling from all of their education, making sure it's very scientifically based. Another benefit of using the farm is definitely the students are more engaged. Everyone, I think, tends to learn more when they're not bored. They're not just listening to lectures. They're not just listening to a PowerPoint. I find, too, you can't text when tools are in your hand. So I think that's So active learning is definitely a benefit of the farm, and I think it becomes more memorable as well. I think one of the things is if for some of you, like Mike here at Mercyhurst, if you're going to have a farm, I think the management of the farm is such a key piece, and so much planning goes into that. Planning for not only the farm itself, the locations, the care of the soil, the planning for each one of the classes. On my phone, the way it lists my call list, but it's people I call most frequently. It falls in just because of the number of calls. First is my husband, but secondly is the Del Bell farm manager. So really, it's just this lots of planning, lots of communication. You need to be flexible. I try to plan labs at the beginning of the semester, but as you know, the weather oftentimes gets in the way of what you want to do out in the field. And so you always have to have an alternative, something in your back pocket that you're going to do. The other thing we've found is the more that's going on in the farm, the easier it is to create experiences for the student. So not only are our students getting, many of our students getting the experience in our laboratories, but many of them also work for the production manager, whether it's work study or just through the employment program. Our farm manager probably has 10 to 12 students on his crew at any given time. So it becomes very helpful as I'm planning a lab. For example, this year we're building a high tunnel. So the students have worked for production. They know where all the tools and supplies are. They get everything ready, then they come to class. They get everything ready as part of the job for production. They come to class, the production manager is there, I'm there, and it's almost, the class becomes a continuation of their employment. And that is, again, just a very positive thing overall. The management structure, I realized, actually, of course we have our Dean of Agriculture. I realized I should, as the faculty member, really should be more off to the side. Because although I report to our Dean of Agriculture, the farm manager doesn't report to me necessarily. He reports directly. I work most closely with the assistant farm manager. And that's just we used to call them the farm manager. Things have just changed a little bit. But this assistant farm manager, again, does not report to me, but this is the person I'm talking to all the time, I'm communicating with. This person has access, he's all the farm equipment, so whether it's the tractors, the plastic layers, the planters, that's all under his purview. He makes the labs actually happen for me. I plan them out, but we talk about how they're going to work, and he'll have all the supplies there, the tools, the things like we've started seeds in the fall semester, again with the Short Tech 1, Short Tech 2, have the exact same students from the fall to the spring. And so what we were talking about, this bridging, We'll start the seeds in the fall for a project that we're going to do in the spring. And the farm manager is going to manage the greenhouse and keep those seedlings alive. Another thing to keep in mind about using campus farms is the seasonality of the school semester. In some respects, it doesn't make sense. Our students are in class September to December and January to mid-May, but as we all know, the production season is really in the summer. So it does make planning more difficult, but what we've found is these season extension structures are a huge benefit. And this is our first high tunnel that the students built. You can obviously be in there late into the fall, even sometimes over the winter, and then again early in the spring. And so when you can't be out in the field, if you have an alternative project that you can do in your high tunnel, then you're golden. All right, so how we use our farm to teach at Del Valle. I have a few more minutes to just show you some pictures. This is what really gets me all excited about what we do, because this is our hands-on education, and I love this, and I know that my students enjoy it too. This is this fall. These students are planting plasticulture strawberries. We also have a market at Delaware Valley College, and it's very interesting. We used to run the market ourselves, and then about 5 or 6 years ago, built this enormous farm market. It's very, very large, and found that we, as an educational entity, couldn't manage it very well. And so we actually now lease it to some local farmers who are running it. But in any case, we plant the strawberries in the fall. The farm manager manages them over the winter. Plasticulture berries, you know, are ready to pick in May. The market then will kind of take over, and then they run the pick-your-own operation that brings out people to pick the berries that were a student project. But in this case, the workers actually got the soil prepared. Then the class laid the plastic. We actually get the students on the tractors. Anyone is allowed to get on the tractor and drive if they'd like. Sometimes the rows are pretty crooked, and sometimes they're pretty straight. So they happen to do a really good job, but then we get the students on the transplanter, and so get them working there. And this is Maria on the tractor. She's a junior this year in the horticulture program, and she not only works for production but is in the horticulture techniques class as well. This is again we feel. With a commercial bent to our farm and how we train our students to do use black plastic mulches. This is planting cabbage in the spring. This is a number of students in the commercial veg class learning how to lay plastic and learning how to work with our plastic layer. Again, this is transplanting the cabbage. We also, in one of our greenhouses, we do tomato production over the winter so that we do have something for the students to work on in the off season. These are the tomatoes that the students planted last year. We again started the seedlings. They evaluate the greenhouse in the fall, lay out the growing bags, seed the tomatoes. In the spring semester, they come back, they plant the tomatoes, do the fertilization, the training, and all the pruning. And then these tomatoes are again sold at the Del Valle market. I'm watching the clock. Another project we do is called Farmer's Apprentice. Again, this is in a cool season greenhouse. We did try to pattern this after Donald Trump's show because just to have a little bit of social relevance, I guess. But every student is given 44 square feet in a raised bed to grow crops over the winter. And then we have a yield competition. And they're also graded on record keeping, which I think is a skill that farmers just definitely need to know. They really enjoyed it. These are just some pictures of what some of the raised beds look like. Again, the high tunnel. Using not only the large equipment but the smaller equipment, deciding on seeding, using the small seeder. This was some cool season crops. We planted carrots and beets in the high tunnel. This was a project the year before in the same high tunnel where we were planting tomatoes. So again, we've used different structures to get the students to learn all different methods of production. and it's just some happy students after their tomato stringing project. And then this is the project that we're working on right now. We're building the high tunnel. This was through a grant through the Natural Resources grant. And so this is the workers got things ready, and then we started to build the tunnel through a series of class projects. It is now almost built and ready to have the plastic put on the top. And then finally, just this isn't vegetable production, but we do have CytoPress, and it is the students are the ones who are using CytoPress, just learning to press cider, and then the cider is used in the dining hall, and it's sold at the market as well. So, in conclusion, talking about using campus farms to teach hands-on production skills, lots of planning is required to make it as successful as possible. It does require a fair amount of finances to have a large, productive campus farm. And I think one of the things, I believe you said it this morning, is great. If you think it's going to be profitable, it's a fallacy. So I thought that was so true. I wrote that down, underlined it. Good management is really key. We go back and forth at Del Valle on whether our farm should look beautiful and pristine, or should it look like students run it. And I think that's something that the administration struggles with sometimes, because we are right on campus. And we do have a commercial farmers market right on campus, and can get a lot of people through there. Hands-on teaching, though, equals experience for the students. That's really, as everyone knows, the best way to learn. When you add into that a strong core curriculum, lots of classes in reading and writing and critical thinking, we want to prepare students for any type of career to go out into the world, whether they're going to be a farmer, whether they're going to work in agribusiness, or whatever they're going to do. It's a good combination, and it strengthens overall the people that we're putting out into the workplace. So that's it. Any questions? Yeah.
Can you just say a little bit about the Del Valle market where some of this stuff is sold?
Yes, I'm sorry I don't have a picture. I should have it's a very, very large structure. It's a large barn structure. And Shaver Farm is a big agricultural entertainment farm in Yonkers, Pennsylvania. So they've taken over the management of the market. These two brothers, and their dad actually went to Del Valle, so they're kind of connected. And so they try to take as much of our produce as they can. And sell it there. Certainly they have certain standards. So obviously if you know, pest control on peaches wasn't good, and they're picked poorly and bruised, then they don't want them. So they can refuse it as well. They have to sell it. And so that sometimes becomes a little bit of an issue as to how much they actually take.
So you have to sell it for them. Wholesale it, and then they resell it.
Yes. Yeah, it's not a great system. I have to say that. Yes.
If a school like Hershey Girls would produce students that have sort of a soft training in agriculture and an incomplete sort of repertoire in terms of training, is there anything that Delaware Valley would offer that could kind of fill in a void for the students like that?
There's two things. As I mentioned, we are looking at having some sort of certificate program, and I think what I'm hearing today is that, for example, if someone graduated from Dickinson and 3 years down the road said, you know, I really want a farm, but I'm still not quite comfortable jumping into the whole farm situation. We're looking at having some sort of certificate program, and that would actually include something we're going to offer in the next winter is exploring the small farm dream. I don't know if you've heard of this course. It's through Pennsylvania Cooperative Extension, but it's a 4-week course. It's about 12 or 14 hours, and it really gets you into the finances of whether or not, and just everything, the lifestyle of whether or not you want to farm. And so that would be part of this certificate program. Not only would it be hands-on learning, and again, it doesn't mean it's going to be at Del Valle. What I'm pushing for is for people to be able to actually intern on farms and then take some sort of online training that would cover sort of a lot of those scientific classes that you have, but shrunk down. The second thing is you can just always come and just take a few of the classes, you know, either for one semester or two, as a continuing ed student. So, the two options. Yes. Years. So that tension is less because I think what everyone just wants to do these days is best management practices, and they're realizing that that doesn't necessarily mean pesticides, and if you do have to use a pesticide, you want to use the softest pesticide, the less, the least amount. So there's certainly a little bit of that there, but in my classes, I always give alternatives. So if I have the traditional ag student who's from a conventional farm, I reference where you can find information on pesticides, and if there's some is organic, then I reference where you can get, I'll help the agricultural controls or whatever the case may be. So we definitely try, we do straddle both areas, but I'm definitely more towards, again, teaching organics, teaching sustainable agriculture, teaching IPM, that's where my program is. Yes.
I'm curious because you've got a really complicated system there. Just how you work with finances. Do things roll back in? Are you able to tap back into funds when things are sold? Does everything go to the general fund or disappear?
No, and that's a very good question. Honestly, it's sort of a black box. We used to have a program called Green into Gold, where the proceeds from the farm were turned back into the department. That ended a number of years ago. So I think the administration is realizing that it's expensive to run a farm, but we're not going to give up on it. It's part of our history. You can see that if with a history like that, you cannot give up on agriculture. It would just. But the finances. Our last farm manager was very good about training the students in the finances of production. And he's no longer at the college, which is unfortunate. I would actually honestly say that's probably one of the weaker sides of their education. Is they do take a marketing class, but again, the actual finances of farming, probably the one area that we cover is just the seed costs with actual farms. But the other things, it's not specifically covered. So that's a good question. Yes.
Yeah. Our faculty who teach the corporate, are they connecting with the farming agricultural programs like Anthony Servino, who's our class, and literature classes? Are there those kinds of connections being made at Delta?
Not as many as we'd like to see. And we, unfortunately, have traditionally had a little bit of that mode. And we are trying to do these across pollination. And certainly things have begun to happen. As we get, begin to be more sustainable, as people try to integrate with all of our farms, because again, we have these two other farms beyond the main campus, so we're really trying to integrate into the whole college. Things are beginning to happen. So for example, we have now have an environmental literature class. They're looking at a history of agriculture class. But it's been slow. And certainly some faculty members are more amenable to it than others. Yes.
So what are the typical students in the Delaware Valley? It sounds like a liberal arts school that's focused on agriculture, which is kind of interesting.
We're an agriculture school focused on agriculture. No, I don't think it's really. I think this has been, and I think this is part of what is we really are both. Traditionally, the students I get are agriculture students. They want to study the sciences. They want to study production. But many of them are strong students. And so they don't, you know, they don't mind having the other classes. Do we get as many of the, say, English majors or whatever, over into the ag? Not as many. It's more the ag students being given a broader background along with all their science and agricultural production classes.
That's right. Do you know a lot of, like, farm kids?
We do. Again, we do. We have a very set of some very traditional students who come from the traditional large production farms. That's probably more the case in the dairy and the large animal classes in horticulture. We're getting just kids who have students who have an interest in food systems and food and production. That's more of the typical horticulture student, although we do have some from, again, from traditional conventional farms.
To play off of that, is there an approach to do sort of that Vermont Technical College shift? So they're pushing out diversified agriculture. I mean, they had a very traditional horticulture track, a very traditional livestock track, and now they're trying to bring those two together. Is there that going on?
Yes. If we, one of the things we're talking about, if we have an actual major in sustainable agriculture, is that you need to have both plant and animal experience and courses, so that if you were to run an integrated farm, that you would have both of those sides of the equation.
It's interesting. I'm a lagger at university, and like with our farm or senior organic farm on campus, we attract more non-ag kids than the conventional agriculture.
I think because we and that's not the case. I actually usually guest lecture every year at Rutgers. And they are, again, they have 50 kids in a class, and none of them are ag majors in the organic class. That's not us. We're attracting more of an ag student, but definitely with an interest more towards organics and sustainability. Less and less of the conventional farm kids. Okay. Thank you very much. Do you need it in the recycle room?
So our keynote speaker, who will be opening at 3:30, Tony Gerasi, he's going to be in our